creepy? We're the CIA. That's what we do.
PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Nicole Gilbert, filling in for my stepmom, Sharon.
Yes, Sharon is sitting out tonight. She is, well, the lack of sleep from having to deal with Jabba the Pup is kind of forced her to bed early tonight. So as we go to record on this March the 9th, 2006, straight up 8 o'clock Bunker Standard Time or 0200 Greenwich Mean, Nicole is sitting in for Sharon tonight. Playing the role of Sharon tonight will be Nicole Gilbert.
Indeed I am.
Well, so we're going to have a little bit of a different form to the program tonight as we have the insights of a perspective from a 16-year-old viewpoint, someone who is in the public education system right now, to get your take on the news and some of the things that we talk about here on at PID Radio. Can tell that your friends have already had some reaction to some of the topics we discuss here. We refer to the wall of paranoia.
Yes, yes.
On a pretty regular basis here. So now who is that? That was Eric who put the comment
Eric
there?
Dodds. Yeah. Eric Dodds, very intelligent guy.
Yeah, we're going to have to take a picture of that, the wall of paranoia.
And then his girlfriend Cindy drew the little flames around
9/11. Yeah.
She's well, interesting.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that they were. Well, just so people know, because we haven't posted a picture of this yet to the forum or to the website. The wall of paranoia is the 4-foot by 8-foot whiteboard that we have with names of all the people connected to various conspiracies that we investigate here at Peering into Darkness.
And the little alien.
Oh yeah,
no alien sticker.
The little no alien sticker that we got from Guy Malone.
Right.
Yeah.
Some
of the names that we've got on this board include, of course, the Bushes, Sun Myung Moon, Promise Software, which we talked about a couple nights ago, Danny Casolaro, Barry Seals, who was a CIA drug-running pilot who was murdered, used to fly drugs into MENA, Arkansas during the Bill Clinton administration. So, of course, Bill Clinton is up there. P-TECH, which is the software company we talked about the couple of nights ago, which developed software which was connected to 9/11, also supplied to many government agencies, et cetera. So we've got all of these connected by charts and arrows and graphs and stuff.
Rather confusing.
Yeah. And then, of course, at the top, wall of paranoia.
With the smiley face exclamation points.
Now, actually, he's not quite correct because it would only be the wall of paranoia if right in the center of all of this stuff and arrows and lines and circles were was the word me in a big circle with all arrows pointing to me in the center.
Roswell.
Yes, that would be the wall of paranoia.
Yeah.
So
he was slightly off, but...
Well, but to his credit, though, in his girlfriend's credit, they didn't run screaming from the house.
Well, Cindy had no idea what it meant, but Dodds looked around. He's like, well, if I had a little more insight, I'd probably get some of this, but I'm sure I could see where the Bushes and John Kerry and 9/11 are all and all this stuff is
interconnected. Okay, well,
he's a smart guy.
Good. Well, I'm glad to see that there is hope for the next generation.
But yeah.
Well, one of the big stories that's in the news that we've been talking about, of course, is the whole thing with the ports and the government allowing a sale of control of 21 American ports from a British company to a Middle Eastern company, the United Arab Emirates.
Right, they were arguing about that in Fox the other day.
Yeah, they've been arguing about it a lot.
Well, yeah, I was watching.
And what's really interesting is that most of the talking heads on Fox seem to be saying, this is all nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
This is all okay.
I specifically remember this maybe a week or so ago, this one guy going, what does it matter that we just sold them to a government group, and you know this other guy's going, of course it matters, and so no it doesn't, and you know the whoever show it happened to be at the time was just kind of sitting back with a raised eyebrow, kind of smiling like, do I step in or should I just keep watching? This is kind of funny because it was rather amusing.
So now, do you guys at school, do you guys ever talk about stuff like this?
Oh yeah, at lunch. Specifically, well, myself, I do talk about stuff like that with my friends. So I know for a fact band kids talk about it, but
okay.
I'm pretty sure other kids talk about it too.
Yeah, Nicole is part of what we here at the Bunker refer to as the best band in the world, trademark, and
yeah.
The high school marching band, actually. And
yeah.
So some of the band kids have paid attention to this. What kind of topics, what kind of conversations do you guys have about this? I mean, do people think it's a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, generally, most of the conversations start out with one person referring to the president and saying, stupid or best thing that ever happened. Well, of course. And then, of course, I jump into the conversation. Usually if they say, well, Bush is stupid, I'll say, well, okay, no, he's not. He's actually intelligent. But I'm not saying I agree with everything he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we generally get into a conversation and someone will bring up, hey, and you know that thing that just happened? You know, the thing in the news with the guys and the thing and the selling and the thing? Yeah. So that happens. And mm-hmm. then we get into this heated conversation and then the bell rings and we spend, you know, 6 out of our 7 passing time minutes, you know, talking unless some administrator comes around and says, move along. And, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. You can listen to teachers talking about it too. I believe 2 of the history teachers were talking about this particular subject
mm-hmm.
sometime today. But generally, I've noticed at school, kids think what their parents think.
Okay.
And it seems like the majority are going with Bush is stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's easy.
Yeah, because. And I'm not, honestly, not insulting any of my friends' intelligence or anybody at school's intelligence. But, you know, it's the easiest thing to say and understand.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get deeper into the subjects, you know, you see things, you know, everybody, once you start diving deeper, people do have pretty good opinions on things.
Mm-hmm.
You just kind of have to scratch below the surface of Bush is stupid, Bush is amazing, or mm-hmm. whatever. So, yeah.
Well, you know, that most of the debate that you see on Fox News and most of the debate that you have at the office, or that I have at the office,
mm-hmm.
pretty much boils down to that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
You don't get much deeper than that most of the time. So sometimes when you try to take a nuanced position, one that's intelligent, or, well, let's not pat ourselves on the back. When you try to think through the position a little bit more with whatever reason God has given you,
exactly.
Sometimes that gives you a position that's not very popular. Like, yeah, Bush is intelligent, but I disagree with him on this issue and this issue and this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Here's an example of what, you know, of going a little deeper on this Dubai ports deal. We've talked about on the show how the president's brother has like $23 million that were given to him or invested in his company by investors in Dubai. Now,
right.
That doesn't mean that the president is automatically going to be in favor of the Dubai ports deal, but it certainly doesn't look too good when you've got investors in this company, from this country, that are giving the president's brother $23 million for his company.
It looks suspicious, just
right.
like accidentally shooting someone on a hunting trip.
Yeah, yeah. But there was news that came out today, which I think is a little more important, especially from being in St. Louis here, where Boeing has a very big plant where they build FA-18s.
Yes, Boeing.
Boeing is negotiating with the government of Dubai and trying to win a very big order for jetliners, like the big wide body, the new 787s
right,
that they're trying
right.
to build. Well, they're competing for this order against a French company called Airbus. And the government of the UAE is basically saying, well, if you don't want to let us play, we're going to take our marbles and go home. This order could potentially be on the upside of $10 billion, and that's in addition to the $10 billion order they just got for a bunch of 777s from Dubai.
Wow.
So, which hasn't been entirely filled yet. So there may be some pressure on the government from Boeing to make sure that this deal goes through. However, in a late twist this afternoon, a story that just came up this afternoon about 6:30,
right?
The Dubai Ports World company has basically just said they are going to take their marbles and go home.
Yeah, they obviously decided to give up its management stake.
Yeah, which means they are going to, this is going to be interesting to see how this, how this turns the story around, because now, if they're not going to be part of this deal, then what?
Yeah.
Because the company that was selling to Dubai Ports World, the P&O company out of Britain,
right,
was selling not just the port control in the U.S., but also operations at ports all over the world, India and other parts in the Africa and around the world. So,
quite a control spot there.
It will be interesting. But, see, this is what happens when you've got a country that's basically controlled by one guy.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about the United States.
Are you kidding?
Yeah,
the United States isn't controlled by one guy.
No. Not the guy that we think, anyway.
No.
The Sheikh of Dubai basically said, well, forget you. And since he's in control of the company there, so they backed out. So anyway, this is an interesting development where the whole argument of whether or not we're going to allow Dubai to control our ports, it may be not an issue anymore. another issue that we talk about a lot on PID, because we think it relates to where we're going as we move into the 21st century,
right,
has to do with the transgenic movement.
Right.
And you just had an experiment in one of your science classes that
exactly
relates to this.
Yeah, my bio class. In fact, I finished the lab and turned it in not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
The experiment, if anybody's been watching Fox News, I believe it was on Fox and Friends, they had taken a pig and made it glow green.
It was really weird.
Green glowing pig. Well, we did a similar experiment in our biology class. Very odd, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Where you basically take E. coli, not harmful, rather, version of E. coli, you know, lives inside you.
Mm-hmm.
And you take it, and because it's bacteria, it's DNA, it's in the form of plasmid, use a restriction enzyme to cut the plasmid at, you know, wherever the certain sequence is that the restriction enzyme will recognize. Then you take a jellyfish gene, because called GFP or green fluorescent protein, I believe, and you insert that by using heat shock and other methods to seal the plasmid back together and make recombinant DNA. That, and I know all that just made me sound incredibly smart, but believe me, I was just following the instructions on the lab. Don't have it in front of me, but I'm going from what I remember. Our experiment actually didn't work because, well, my best friend of 11 years, Tom Rust, first of all, messed up our experiment. But
Rust.
Exactly. Fe203, yeah. Our experiment, the blame from Tom was, the blame that was going to be put on Tom had to be, you know, vanished because our quote-unquote student teacher, she took our project, she took our lab, our experiment, and put the four petri dishes into the incubator. But the problem was, our incubator was too good, and we ended up on the hot spot, and our actual petri dishes melted.
Oh, well, that's bad.
So
good thing you weren't working with level 4 biohazard material.
Yeah, something like that. Mm. But it came out, and Tom goes, yes, because he was saved from taking the blame because we forgot to incubate it an extra 10 minutes at room temperature, so it wouldn't have glowed green anyway.
But many of the E. coli, so what happens when it comes out? Do the E. coli glow green under fluorescent light or what?
Well, actually, yes. What happens is, you take a, you know, black light, whatever you want to call it, and you turn off all the lights, wave it over the E. coli, and they indeed glow green. And, I mean, it's not just like this faint little thing, like when you get a glow-in-the-dark toy and, you know, it's been in the dark for a while, so its glow has reduced to nothing, or those glow necklaces you get at concerts that, you know, you freeze them 8 times and then they don't work anymore. No.
Right.
Bright glowing green. I mean,
really?
it's pretty, but it makes you think, and it was interesting to do. It was a fun lab to do, because biotechnology is, I find it fun.
Uh-huh.
I mean, not that I find lab write-ups fun, but, you know. But one of the questions for our conclusions on lab write-up happened to be, I remember distinctly, question number 7.
Mm-hmm.
In this lab, you altered a life form. How do you feel about that? My answer was honest. I said, well, even though it was E. coli, not something as large or something as familiar to me as a pig or a dog mm-hmm. that I was altering, it was still a living life form, and I don't feel that great about playing God because he's the only one who should be allowed to do that.
Wow.
And
you go.
And so my final sentence was, even though I wasn't exuberant about doing this, I still did it for the grade. And that was mm-hmm. that was how I ended that question. And I hope I don't get points. I doubt I'll get points taken off because Mrs. Shore is a pretty good grader when it comes to that. But mm-hmm. still, it's an interesting thing. And we all saw the glowing green pig thing in mm-hmm. our bio class because it was shown to us.
Right, and we've run a picture of it at Watcher Magazine.
Right.
Did you guys talk about this in class, about that question, number 7?
Did
you guys talk about it outside of class?
I talked about it with my friend Tom just outside of class because we happened to be doing labs together while eating cookie cake and other delicious items. He came over to help work on the labs, but we were sitting in class and we got different situations. I think this was Mrs. Shore's way of dealing with this.
Mm-hmm.
Got these different situations. And ours happened to be something about two girls have mothers who are both 45 with breast cancer,
mm-hmm.
but one died and one recovered successfully. So the girls find out about, they're both in college, and they find out about this study, how you can do a genetic test for breast cancer, and mm-hmm. the girl whose mom died really, really wants it and says, we need to get this, and the girl whose mom didn't die says, well, I can just do scans like my mom, you know, self-screening like my mom did to, you know, because that's how my mom found it. And our question was, do you think this is a good idea? Because, you know, sure, health insurance will go up if, you know, this. And, but one of, you know, that had some debate on it. But the real question that really got debated was the one, it was, in the future, they've isolated the gene for good athletic performance.
Mm-hmm.
And like amazing, outstanding athletic performance. So there's a college that will, if you take this genetic test, and you happen to have this gene, they will automatically allow you into the school and automatically give you they will guarantee you a varsity spot on the track team.
Mm.
And do you think this is right? That was the question. We debated on that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it did get into some politics after a while because I don't quite remember what it was said, but, you know, we debated on that. And honestly, I don't think that's right. You know, it was just, We did talk about it,
mm-hmm.
and it seemed like myself and several others were against it. It was either you were against genetic transformation, especially of humans,
mm-hmm.
or you really didn't care one way or the other because you didn't think it would get to that. Nobody mm-hmm. seemed to be completely for it. Yeah, all right, let's genetically engineer our children to be, you know, before we have them, so they're going to be perfect or mm-hmm. stuff like that. It was either didn't care because you never thought it was going to get there, or just didn't want it to happen at all. And I'm obviously with the, I don't think that should ever happen because mm-hmm. playing God should be left for one being only.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fair to do it any other way.
Well, interesting that you guys are actually recombining DNA as high school sophomores. That's something
oh, yeah.
that we did not do. This is a relatively new science. And I think there are probably some listeners who would be surprised to hear that high school students are actually experimenting with recombinant DNA.
Well, yeah.
Because that's the kind of thing that we think of happening in very secure and high-tech laboratories funded by universities or government someplace.
Well, it first happened in most of the listeners' lifetimes, including
right.
yours.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think the first
DNA wasn't discovered until about the end of World War II.
Yeah, and I believe the first like recombinant DNA, you know, I mean, well, the Human Genome Project wasn't finished until 2003, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the first successful recombinant DNA was like maybe the 70s?
Probably.
73 or 8 or something. We talked about that in mm-hmm. class too. And, you know, because Mrs. Shore was just trying to give us a time frame. But it was a pretty surprising number.
Well, now what about stem cell research, embryonic stem cell research? Did you guys talk about that at all?
No, I had a feeling that would end up in a distinct feeling that would end up in a heated debate if if we start talking about it.
Well, that's in the news again this week because Christopher Reeve's widow just passed away, and she died of cancer. Of course, Christopher Reeve was an activist for embryonic stem cell research, and you can understand why. He had a spinal injury that might have been cured or might be curable someday, that type of injury, through the use of stem cells. But the question is, what kind of stem cells are we going to work with, and how do we go about getting them?
Exactly. The whole concept of cloning, you know, embryos and to get stem cells confounds me. Why do we need to do that if we can? If you can just get it from placenta? And
you can also get it from, well, they're discovering they can even take them from hair follicles.
Yeah, why?
They can take them from your fat cells. And I've got plenty of extra saved up just for in case.
A little over the top there, but okay. You know, it's all good. Yeah, I mean, it baffles me. It's not like they're being subtle. I had a great example, but I just lost it.
Well, I think the thing that people need to understand is that when you're talking about embryonic stem cells, you are talking about cloning.
Yeah.
And you're talking about large-scale cloning because not every embryo that is created can be harvested. And that's what you're talking about. You're talking about the creation of human life.
Yeah.
Although I think those who are in favor of this would argue that you're not talking about human lives. You're talking about potential lives. But however you want to play with the words, the fact is you are creating something that is growing and, if allowed to grow in a normal environment, i.e. inside the womb, would develop into a human person. And then you're killing them, harvesting them as though they were a crop.
I know. That's one of the things that creeps me out most of all. And especially because, you know, it brings up another debate. All these just lead to more connections. Are you really making, is something allowed to live without, you know, a soul? I mean, you're creating something practically from nothing. I mean,
that's a good question. Where does the soul come from?
Exactly. That's a fantastic question. And
that one's going to be a little beyond the scope of this particular podcast, I think. That's why.
But, I mean, it still brings up that question.
It's a good question to think about.
Because, I mean, are you bringing up, I mean, when you're cloning these things, are they really going to be a person or are they just going to be a shell? And a shell for what?
Yeah. Well, that's actually an area that we can expand on in the novel that I'm working on. So
exactly.
But that is a good question.
Buy his books. Buy his books.
Oh, you're a great daughter. Here's a 20.
yeah.
Does the creation of the soul take place at the time of conception between sperm and the egg? And if you create a human through the, what do they call it, the somatic cell transfer?
Yeah.
You basically remove the genetic material from the egg and then put a cell from what you want to clone into that egg. Mm-hmm. But here's the other question, and this is just logistics. Since you have to clone so many in order to get, because only a small percentage of these will actually start to grow when you when you create them, where do you get all of those eggs?
Another good question.
Women are born with a fixed amount of eggs.
Yeah.
And you don't grow new ones as you grow older. I mean,
that's what menopause is.
Exactly. And there is some debate as to whether you should pay women to hyperovulate and release more eggs at one time so they can be collected, or to actually take donors who are willing to allow scientists to harvest all of their eggs, or, and this is where it gets really creepy, because this has been done in Korea and probably other places, do you use the eggs of other mammals and implant those eggs with human cells? Do you take eggs from rabbits or cows or pigs and implant them with human cells? I mean, this is public record. We're not, you know, this isn't science fiction. This is being done. And it's being seriously proposed because scientists, researchers, proponents of embryonic stem cell research have to get around the problem of where to come up with all these eggs. So in order to avoid having to use human eggs, of which there is a limited supply, you can use animal eggs. But if you do that, What are the implications? Do you wind up with the island of Dr. Moreau? Invertebrates?
Manimals.
Manimals, invertebrates, yeah.
As a female, that just horrifies me.
Well, I would hope so.
That should horrify anyone, I think. But...
Well...
Some people.
Well, this is something we talked about last night, Sharon and I,
right.
In discussing what is right, what is wrong, and how do you decide?
Yeah.
If you assume that there is no God and that the highest form of life in the universe, well, at least the highest form of life on this planet is man,
mm-hmm.
What stops you then from saying, yeah, it's okay to, A, harvest eggs from women to create little clone farms, or B, clone using cow, pig, rabbit, mouse eggs and create these transgenic hybrids. Why would that be wrong?
Well, that's obviously a tough question. And it brings up a lot of tough answers. And it's hard for me to assume, you know, to think of anything without, you know, God as the premise for mm-hmm. right and wrong, because that just makes sense to me. It makes so much sense that I can't think of it without it. There really isn't anything to... It's too hard to say, you know, without God, it would... who... is there to say what's right and wrong? I mean, maybe there would be some people standing up still and saying, no, this isn't right. You shouldn't be doing this. This is personal. This is a personal thing. But then again, you never know.
Yeah. Surprisingly, the scientist in Korea who was discredited for fudging his research.
Yeah, actually, I was just looking at that.
What was his name? Dr. Huang?
Huang, right.
Yeah. He had women on his staff who volunteered to let him use their eggs.
Yeah, that's...
creepy.
Very. What were they getting out of this? Money?
I don't know. Fame? Or maybe they just really believed in the project and thought they were part of something that was going to benefit mankind down the road.
Yeah. Yeah. Seems to have received a lot of money to do this, too.
Yeah. Well, one other topic I want to throw out, because I'm kind of curious to... see if you guys at school had talked about this at all, and that's the NSA spying issue. But then the bigger topic of how much right does the government have to look in on, say, your email, online chat, or cell phone calls?
Yeah, this is
in the interest of national security.
This is something that does come up, obviously. Well, high schoolers' first reaction is, hey, that's not right. Because, well, you know, what's the first reaction of a high schooler? Leave me alone!
Well, in general, yeah, when I was 16, I really didn't want mom and dad listening, grandma and grandpa listening in on my phone calls either.
Well, I mean, it's, yeah, judging on some of the kids at school, yeah.
But see, here's the reason I ask. The NSA, it's come out, the National Security Agency, has been listening in on the overseas conversations of Americans without warrants. Now, we talked to people overseas on this program. We just talked to reporter Barry Chamish in Israel the other night.
Right.
We talked to Patrick Heron in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally, I will have conversations with business associates in Malaysia, Singapore, China, and Indonesia, and Australia. So,
way to have connections.
Well, it's just part of the business. They
Rock
use,
on.
But it's very possible that the NSA, that somewhere in the vault there, the NSA has listened in, or at least has them on file. I don't think we said anything that would have attracted their attention. But you never know. I mean, the possibility exists that they could have listened in without a warrant. And in the past, the government had to go to a court, a special court, and say, we think... that Mr. Gilbert is a potential terrorist, and so we need a right to listen in on his telephone calls to his overseas connections.
That's what.
And the secret court would say, well, you haven't proven your case. We're not going to grant the request. Or, yeah, we think you might be right. Go ahead. What has come out is that since 9/11, The president authorized the NSA to go ahead and do it regardless. So then the question becomes, and it's also come out that there are other programs going on now inside the government, inside the NSA, to spy on domestic communications. So going beyond the question of, do you want people just listening in, you know, like your parents or, you know, friends who don't, you don't want to hear about stuff, you know.
Stuff.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's got stuff that there are certain other people they don't want to hear. But
stuff.
The president's defense has been that they need to respond quickly to potential threats. They need to be ready to move at a moment's notice to catch somebody in the act.
Right.
Do you and your friends get the sense that, I mean, do you get the sense that most of the kids at school agree with that, that we should allow the government some freedom to look in on our conversations and communications to keep us safe, or that that's bogus?
Honestly.
And is bogus still a word that's used in 2006?
Hate to disappoint, but no.
Oh, okay.
Terribly sorry, really. I feel bad about that.
That's okay.
Honestly. Hey.
This is why
the 80s are coming back, though.
Yeah, this is why my first novel coming out is going to be set in a fictional land in a far distant time where I don't have to worry about being completely out of touch.
But the 80s are coming back.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that.
rad. But, yeah. Honestly, I think it was Eric Dodds who I was talking about this with. Definitely not very favorable on, you know, yeah, you do need to take some measures, you know, some actions to keep the country safe, but what seems to be the consensus at school was that it's domestic phone calls, I think, is taking it a little too far. Because that's just invasion of privacy. I mean, since, you know, more and more power keeps going to the government, you know, as time goes on, and this is just another one of those things. And it's getting insane, really. I mean, man, you ever have one of those days where you just know what you want to say, but you can't say it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any day that ends with the letter Y.
Yeah, I've got one of those going on. Yeah. But, I don't know. It just, they're becoming more and more, you know, the government is becoming more and more like robot overlords. I mean, protectors. Did I say overlords? I really meant protectors.
Protectors. Yes. Yeah, a little reference there for our friend, Taylor Kent, the snarky Avenger. And, thank you for, introducing us to Jonathan Colton.
Enjoying the podcast.
The Constitution is supposed to protect us from unlawful search and seizure.
Right.
And listening in on phone calls without a warrant seems to violate that.
Definitely.
We fought a war in the 1770s and 80s to win the freedom from the English crown from unlawful search and seizure. And it seems as though 9/11 and the threat of terror has been used to convince Americans that we need to give up certain rights which were not granted to us by the Constitution, and that's a misconception, rights that were granted to us because we were created in the image of God.
Indeed.
Okay? Created in the image of God, and thus those rights, that is the reason that those rights are unalienable.
Exactly.
Cannot be taken from us by any other man, whether he be a king or a president.
Or alien.
Or alien. Especially alien, which is because they're unalienable.
Right.
So, the thing that really distresses me in looking at the state of America today is the willingness of Americans to go along with the idea that the government has the right to do this as long as it's, you know, for our own safety, as long as it's to keep us protected from the boogeymen.
Right, right.
And I'm just curious. I can understand why, and I really wasn't too surprised to hear that most of the kids at school, most of the young adults that you go to school with.
Hoity-toity.
Are opposed to this idea or don't really like the idea.
Right.
If they were voting age, if you guys were able to have voted in the last election, would the majority have voted for George W. Bush or would more of them have voted for John Kerry?
Well, I know Tom Winterose would have voted for Nader, but Tom Winterose doesn't count.
What instrument does he play?
He's alto sax.
Okay.
He's our funny man. That's a tough thing to say because, you know, we had kids in class going, oh, Bush is stupid. Let's vote for John Kerry, even though we can't vote, and stuff like that. And there's people saying one thing or the other. And I think it really comes down to what do their parents think? Because what their parents thought would have been what they voted at in mm-hmm. most cases. I mean, you remember Josh Travis, right?
Right.
Okay, he would have been the one exception, but, you know, maybe Tom Winterose, but, you know.
And Josh is the one you guys figure is most likely to run for president someday?
Yes, yeah. And honestly, he would be a good president, I think, mm-hmm. because he went from, you know, in elementary school, you know, early elementary school, I'm Republican. Then towards, you know, late elementary school to middle school was the, no, I'm a conservative. That was the conservative era. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, late middle school was, you know, like half of seventh, maybe eighth grade. That was, I'm more in the middle. You know, I'm sort of a conservative at some points, but I'm also, I'm a little liberal at other points and, occasionally I'm green and and then now we've got high school and he's just, you know, he's in debate, he's in, you know, everything he can with any sort of government thing, and he's very opinionated, and I don't think that, you know, people can change, but, you know, I don't think he'd be corrupted too easily, but, you know, the government will change too, so he might not ever even end up being in the running. But just so you know, he'll probably run independently, but vote for Josh Travis.
Someday.
Because he'll support you. So, yeah.
So that'd be in the election in 2022.
Yeah. Right?
The 2022 election cycle?
Yes. Okay. So
we'll look for that. Well, we're just about out of time. We filled it pretty quickly.
And,
you can tell we have a lot of interesting discussions around the bunker here. And we're very happy that Nicole is with us this week while her mom is really doing a kind of a neat thing.
Yeah. Yeah,
she's out in San Diego going through marine training for the United States Marine Corps.
Yeah.
And basically, it's a public relations outreach of the Marine Corps that shows educators and media types.
Right. Well, actually, she's the only media person there. It's generally mm-hmm. educators, and just happens to be that because my mom's brother, my uncle, mm-hmm. Greg, is Lieutenant Colonel in the Marine Corps, and every time she sees a Marine, it's, hi, how you doing? Oh, you're a Marine. Hey, my brother's a Marine. Yeah, he's Lieutenant Colonel Greg Deeb and blah, 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 and she goes on the spiel, and then she makes friends right away. Mm-hmm. So because of all these friends, she happened to get herself into this, so... Yeah, when I talked to her today, she sounded pretty exhausted, but she said it's been the, you know, most exciting thing ever.
Very cool. Well, and it gives an insight to what the men and women in the Corps go through, and
yeah.
So we have a lot of respect for her going through this, going through the program this week. It'll be interesting to talk to her and see what she went through when she comes back.
And she's going to see graduation tomorrow, their graduation, and mm-hmm. she also went to the Eagle Globe and Anchor ceremony, which was,
you know,
apparently pretty amazing.
If I'd have thought about it before she went, I would have asked her to go out and take a picture of that swastika-shaped building that the Navy has out there
right.
in San Diego.
That's
wanted to see that up close and in person, and who works out of that building.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's so. Anyway, we're happy to have Nicole here this week, and of course, Java seems to have taken to Nicole. She's
and my socks.
Yeah,
I've got a hole to
holes
prove
in
it.
Your
right there.
Oh. Nice. Well, yeah, anything that's floor level is fair game for her. Well, tomorrow, God willing, Sharon will be back, and we'll give you the Friday news blather wrap-up. And, Nicole, you've done an excellent job.
Thank you.
You considering a career in podcasting someday?
Possibly. You know.
You know, she comes by her speechifying naturally. I had a 12-year career in broadcasting, and Nicole's mom is still a professional broadcaster, doing very, mm-hmm. very well, and has been in it for, well, as long as I... She got started the same time I did, so she's been in for a long time. It's,
and, well, good times.
So, anyway, we'll be back tomorrow, and until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Nicole Gilbert.
And we thank you for listening to PID Radio. Gonna step up to the microphone.